You know about the dead bear?
Oh, yeah. He dumped a bear in Central Park.
Why is there not a rule that you can't be a presidential candidate if you've dumped bears? Surely they could solve this problem with just a piece of legislation.
This episode of Stand Up Business is sponsored by Fluid Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981, and pioneers in foundational financial literacy.
Mark Barnes, good morning to you.
And a jolly good morning to you. I was wondering how long it would take you to count a second.
Well, it would take a second, obviously.
Well, then you'd be no good as an observer for the final of the 100 meters Olympics.
Okay. Yeah, God.
Because sadly, our man Simbine lost out to a medal by 1/100th of a second. Okay, that's how much he came fourth by. And if that's not a startling enough little statistic, how about this one? The first two were separated by, listen to it, 5/1000th of a second. Okay, so their recorded time was both 9.79, but in the fourth decimal place, there was 5 points difference. Okay, and the time between the gold medal and the missed medal in total was 3/100ths of a second. So, Tim, you do not qualify as an adjudicator for the 100-meter final. That's all I want to tell you now. Okay.
No. I mean, I was so depressed by what happened with Simbine. It's a terrible thing in the Olympics that you get medals for the top three, and then everybody after that, So being fourth is the sort of worst place to come. And just by the way, he's got steadily better over the years.
Yeah.
And if he had run this speed or this time, 9.82, which by the way is a national record, he would have got medals in both the previous Olympics that he participated in. It's terrible.
Well, damn well nearly got one here. It was sad. But you know, fourth is a funny thing. I was once interviewed for a big SAE job, not the post office, and in the prelim interviews, I was there as a stalking horse, but in the prelim interviews they came back to me and said, Mark, you came fourth. and only the top three names go through to cabinet or whatever it was. And so I said, man, I've never come fourth in my life. Fourth is the worst place you can come. Okay, so don't come fourth. But there has to be a cutoff. There have to be winners and losers, eh?
Yeah, no, it's true. And I mean, you know what's interesting about him? He was so gracious about it, I thought.
Yeah.
He said, nobody has ever done better from South Africa in the 100 meters. And they've still got the 4x100 team. And it's just a very gracious response.
To be the currently measured fourth fastest person out of 8 billion, it's not a bad achievement. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's face it. To that point, I've found all losers at the Olympics to be very gracious and embracing of one another and things of that nature. And it's the interesting difference is that it's not only individual, it's also national pride. Okay.
Yeah.
And I saw a major difference. I was watching the final of the men's singles golf yesterday, which was littered with the top 10 players in the world, but they were playing for their country.
Right.
And it was probably one of the best finishes, 9 holes of a golf tournament I've ever seen. And then, of course, Djokovic won his first ever Olympic gold medal, beating Alcaraz. And he said in the interview afterwards, he feels better than he's felt winning any other major.
Yes.
It's got something about it, this Olympics, eh?
As I said last week, I made the mistake of writing a column suggesting that we should think about holding it again.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I got dunked on by everybody.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that because, you know, what happens with the Olympics is that in the precursor to the Olympics, everybody's miserable and everybody talks about the expense and the cost and all of that sort of stuff. Then as the Olympics happens, everyone's absolutely delighted by the gorgeous party.
Yeah.
And then, you know, afterwards, they get miserable again.
The hangover is coming, boy.
Yeah, that's right.
I was just pondering how France in the same year got to host the Rugby World Cup and the Olympics. I mean...
No. That's very deliberate. So when I was talking to the people who tried to put together the South African Cape Town Olympic bid, they said, you know, if you're going to do a sport event, it's best to do a string in a row.
Yeah, from the capital perspective.
Financially, it sort of works.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So then you're getting the maximum mileage out of, you know, different iterations. And one is a single code and over the whole country, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's very funny.
Makes even sense.
Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Which is why, another reason why I think we should think about it, because we won't get the sucker.
You're a sucker for punishment. Have you not learned from last week's on you? Okay. You know, I mean, I also think we should. I mean, why not add to the congestion problems in Cape Town for a few months? You know, you know what I've worked out? I sat there in Cape Town last week and I figured out, first of all, you know, there are only two ways in and out of Cape Town, and there's so many different ways in and out of Joburg. Not that anyone wants to come to the middle of Joburg, but right. The real issue, what is the real issue? What do you think is the real issue? Go on. I distilled it in a moment, in an epiphany,
okay,
which is very obvious, and I'm going to get into trouble for it, is that half of Cape Town is surrounded by the sea.
Right.
And you can't take your car on the sea. Okay. And so they've got a traffic problem of all of their own.
I've always thought that it's that horrible mountain thing that they've got there in Cape Town. You know, if they just flattened it. You know, they could take a few bulldozers, push it down, and we'd be okay. Yeah, you know, from a traffic point.
You're going to get punished this week, my friend, I can tell you. It's a short...
I know.
It's a short week, thankfully. Friday's Women's Day.
I know.
So now, talking about peaks.
Yes.
And mountains.
Yes.
I read that Berkshire Hathaway, okay, has sold more in the last quarter than it has in its entire history leading up to now. So it's dumped more shares now than it's ever dumped in its entire history. Now, I want to think about that a bit. First of all, you know, there's no question that Warren Buffett is, you know, central to the wisdom of markets and value creation and fundamental value and so on. What's changed, Tim? You see, I think they're sitting on $277 billion in cash. So cash, when I was brought up, was the enemy, okay?
Yes.
What's happening? I mean, if nothing else, there's going to be volatility, I think, for some time. What are your thoughts on the market?
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you on that. And, you know, you could see it. The Nikkei this morning.
Yeah.
Closed 12.4% down. I mean, it's just incredible.
Wow.
One day, 12% down on one day is just amazing. By the way, I know nothing about this, right? Just so that it can be clear.
Well, then you are perfectly qualified to express an opinion on it.
Yes, exactly. But according to what I read, so, you know, in other words, regurgitation of somebody else's regurgitation, the proximate cause is something called the SAM rule, which was a consequence of very disappointing U.S. jobs market data, which came out on Friday. So the SAM rule is basically the correlation of unemployment figures against recessions. Essentially, it's an attempt by, you know, the historical analysis to try and predict recession. So what happens when a recession is coming is that unemployment gradually creeps up, right? And then the recession happens and then unemployment really goes up sharply. So if you have a set of steadily increasing poor unemployment numbers, then the SAM rule kicks in. And it's very close to kicking in.
Yeah, I don't want to sound, you know, strange, but that's pretty bloody obvious to me. If less people are earning money, they're going to spend less on it, on stuff. And so that's pretty obvious. I didn't know that it warranted a special rule of economics, you know, but also there are other currents. You know, I've never seen such polarization politically and economically and otherwise, where people on both sides are now literally having fisticuffs in the street and, you know, and at any gathering and so on. And so the middle, the sensible middle, if there ever was or is such a thing, is decimated as people pick sides. And so it's a kind of a polarized world. I'm not comfortable about it. And volatility is going to rule. And volatility is an interesting thing to
have to deal
factor
with.
Into your investment plan.
You know what I read this morning, which I just think is just priceless. The independent presidential candidate, Robert F. Kennedy, you know about the bear.
Yeah.
You know about the dead bear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, am I actually reading this?
A bear in a forest. There's another thing there. Yeah.
So apparently happened was...
He dumped a bear in Central Park.
Apparently he said he was driving behind a woman who hit and killed a bear in her car. So he put the bear in his car and then he had to go and do stuff And then he didn't know what to do with the bear, so he dumped it in New York City, in Central Park.
This is a presidential candidate. This is a presidential candidate. Why
is there not a rule that you can't be a presidential candidate if you've dumped bears? Surely they could solve this problem very easily with just a piece of legislation.
There's a bear.
Don't say it.
There's a bear dump in the bush. I'll answer. Okay. Well, I mean, what would you do if you got this bloody bear in your boot? Okay. I mean,
I would just say, me personally, I'm not judging or anything, but me personally, I would not put the bear in the car. You know what I mean? I just would not have done that.
Yeah. I'd phone the bear people and say, hey guys, there's a bear in the street. And they would go, no more loony calls today, please. Okay. Can you imagine the call when they found it in the, the world is losing it, man.
Totally. And so, you know, in some weird way, we deserve this volatility. Because if we are going to play silly buggers with logic and common sense, and I think we should have to take our medicine, you know, if that's how it's going to roll out.
You raise an interesting choice of words. Common sense, I don't think exists anymore by definition. And common sense doesn't mean it's clever. It just means that a lot of people agree with it. Okay. And I just don't think we have common sense across the world, across so many metrics. And that doesn't bode well for like democracy, and things of that nature. So I'm glad I'm old, Tim. That's all I'm telling you. Okay. I want to say, stuff,
once again, we find, arcane things that we disagree on. I do believe in common sense. For some reason, I believe in common sense. And the reason I believe in common sense was because once I read a book called The Wisdom of Crowds.
Right. Yeah.
And people have done this before. You know, if you take a jar full of Smarties.
Yes.
You say to a sufficient number of people, how many Smarties are in this jar?
You'll get an answer.
You take all of their results, you take all of their answers, and you average it out, you'll get incredibly close to the number of Smarties that are on the jar.
Yeah.
So one doesn't want to extrapolate too far from the Smarties in the jar. On the other hand,
I mean, there's a big issue there for me, which is that you can see the Smarties, okay, and you can pass judgment on them. And there's only one Smarties and a lot of smart asses around. Okay. And so now it's when you can't see. It's when what we're arguing about is in the ether, and it's things you believe in and things that you hate and love and stuff of that nature, that it becomes very difficult to find consensus about what the right answer is. And I use the word right with the reserve, given what's happening in London at the moment. And so I'll tell you this, though.
Yeah.
The people who count the Smarties submit to the notion that if enough of them look at it, they'll get to the answer. Okay. The people who disagree about things in which they believe both fundamentally believe that they are right and that the other is wrong. Fundamentally.
Okay. Yeah, no, good point. Great point. You know, that there are certain things that we, in certain areas, certain topics where we are extremely prone to coming up with precisely the wrong answer. And, you pointed to one of them, which are things that you believe in very deeply. But psychologists go through the host of these, tendencies that people have to see patterns when they're not, to see progressions where they're not. It's amazing. But, strangely enough, what's a good example of the wisdom of crowds is stock markets. Because, in a stock market...
Yeah. Like the tulips, for instance. The wisdom of crowds. Yeah, tulips from Amsterdam. Have a go. Yeah, I'm listening.
But in general, apart from those, sort of crazy moments, of course, it makes sense because there's two different views here. There's views that the market is always right, and there's a view that the market is always wrong, right? And you can choose either of those positions and argue it very cogently and logically. But if you wanted to take the argument that the market is always right, you could say this, right? The utility of markets is that you are only rewarded for your correct decision. You're not rewarded for your beliefs. You're not rewarded for what you think should be the case. You're only rewarded for what will actually be the case. And the second thing is that it's a polar decision. You're either right or wrong. There's no middle. You know, either you bought the right stock or you didn't. And the combination of those two things make it a very true, they exclude some or most, but not all, as you point out, of the kind of fiction that human beings think up.
I mean, you talk about whether the markets are right or wrong. There's one rule that I've found personally to be true, is that the markets can be wrong longer than you can stay solvent.
Okay.
If you bet against them.
No.
The other thing I'll question is, I wonder how many people determine the buying and selling in the market. Now, I'd argue that it's kind of less than a million, say,
right,
or less than some small number, and that the masses, the crowds, have absolutely no influence on the market other than their consumer behavior. But even that, you know, is arguably overruled by the weight of funds. And the weight of funds is in the hands of very, very few.
Yes, no, that's right. Although that is changing, I do think there's this organization, which I think is very interesting, called Easy Equities. I don't know whether you know anything about that organization.
You're an insightful man, Tim. You're an insightful man.
But I think they're doing incredibly good work, bringing people who don't normally invest in stock markets into the stock markets, which is a very good thing.
The challenge we have in an unequal society like ours is that most people have spent their lives managing their liabilities, not their assets.
Okay. Yes.
And so they manage their borrowings. They've got no assets. Essentially, they manage their mortgage and their car loan and their student loan and their other loan and their overdraft and so on. And eventually they pay those things off and then the children get to spend the money. Okay. So, I mean, the real challenge that you refer to now, democratizing sort of investment and share ownership, is to give people a glimpse as early as possible in their lives about what an asset is and what it's like to own one. However small.
Yes.
And we found that they protect that asset much more than you think and save much more than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
What's the difference between investing and speculating? Should you time the markets or spend time in the markets? What is risk and why spend so much time managing it? Why is compounding considered the most powerful force in the universe? And why is time one of the most important elements in the compounding formula? Learn these and other key investment principles from one of the best in the industry. In his book, Time in the Markets, Dave Fuad, founder of Fuad Asset Management, shares anecdotes and experiences earned over decades immersed in the markets. Valuable insight that will have you investing successfully for the long term. Download your free copy of Time in the Markets from their website, fuad.co.za. That is F-O-O-R-D. And while you're there, look out for Fuad Industries' first Teach Your Child to Invest picture book series about saving and investing. Fuad Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981 and pioneers in foundational financial literacy.
Tim, I see Kamala is now going back to bears in the forest. I mean, bears in the park.
Right.
So I see Kamala is now the nominated candidate, right?
Yeah.
In the US election. Yep. She hasn't got a seconder, you know, a deputy. What do they call them? A running mate.
Yes.
But the fight's on. And I'd argue that increasingly, you know, she's got a bigger and bigger chance as more and more gets revealed and unraveled and discovered about her opponent.
I think it's so interesting how she's changed the race, obviously, but how her attack on Trump is different, right? And I think Biden's attack on Trump was essentially that he was a danger to democracy, you know, which is kind of very righteous, highfalutin, slightly overstated if you're asking me honestly, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, missed the mark. Kamala Harris's and the, you know, the new sort of team, their criticism of Trump is that he's weird.
And there's plenty of evidence.
I don't think you can say that's overstated. I think that's slightly understated. But I like the fact that there's like a little bit of levity in the analysis. You know, it's not coming from a point of view of, you know, patronizing superiority, which is always the weakness of the left, I find interesting.
Tim, you want to talk about import duties if we've got some time?
Yeah. No, just quickly, because I saw this is a very interesting thing because, you know, this is part of the move to online shopping around the world. There's now two enormous, absolutely enormous Chinese international sales organizations, Shein and Temu.
Yeah.
people in South Africa are very acutely aware of price, of course. They're quite big in South Africa, much bigger than people think.
Yeah.
And they are very effective and they're very cheap, obviously. But one of the reasons they are cheap is because apparently for any goods imported into South Africa under 500 Rand, there's a flat rate of 20% import duty. So if you order three things from Shein, they split up the package so that will come in separately and come in less than... No, that's right. So now, of course, SARS, it doesn't want this. This is obviously a tax avoidance scheme. But how do you fix it? The way you fix it, I presume, is that you ask the post office to see who's being sent items from the same organization on the same day, right? And then you package those together.
And don't hold your breath.
No, and it's just interesting to me. So obviously, SARS hasn't been able to find a way to stop Shein and Temu doing this package splitting thing because they don't have a post office, a reliable functioning post office with which to use it as a tool in this process. So now you know something about this. What's the problem?
Well, one of the things I've always claimed is that, you know, the post office, for example, could clear customs as an organ of state.
Right.
And there are these very valuable functions that organs of state can perform on behalf of the state. And we had an interesting or maybe analogous situation where the originator of a postal event got 80% of the revenue.
Right.
Okay. So if someone sent something from China to South Africa, 80% of that postal revenue was due to the originator in China, and we got 20% of the postal revenue, and because we had to receive and then manage it internally. And one of the challenges we have was tiny, tiny packages. And they used to send bulk, tiny packages of, you know, 5-cent earrings. But they clogged up our system because we had to examine all of those packages and scan them, because you can also fit a pair of diamonds in a little tiny package amongst a whole bunch of, you know, of toys. And so these cross-border inconveniences or inequalities are a universal challenge that we'd have to address, because those rules are just the definition of the playing field, and you can't blame people for taking them to best advantage. I don't know how you solve it. But I agree, an efficient postal service working in conjunction with SARS and the government would be the root of the solution. Yes. I think we've done for this week. We've solved the world. We've done everything.
Well, we haven't addressed, you know, global warming, global wealth inequality.
There's that. There's that.
Unemployment.
But apart from that, we've nailed down the size of packages. Package sizing, we've got off the bat.
No, exactly. Okay. Mark, thanks very much. That was an interesting chat as always.
Long weekend coming up. Enjoy.
Cheers. Look after yourselves, everyone.
Cheers.